The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Myself, but by the grace of God, I'm able to even move my feet. Like, I just leave it in his hands.
Last question for you. That American flag around your shoulders looks pretty good. How does that feel to represent your country like this?
It feels amazing. I love representing the U.S. I love living there. I love it, and I'm so happy I get to represent USA! Love it.
Well said. Congratulations. Enjoy that gold, and we'll see you out there on the podium, okay?
Thank you. I'll try not to cry, but no promises.
Well, that clip from yesterday that went viral certainly is refreshing, I should say, amid all of the negativity, amid all of the anti-Americanism that the media amplifies. There's quite a few athletes, as it turns out. There's quite a few athletes in Tokyo that I'm speaking of the American team that really do love and appreciate their country. But the media, being the media, the propagandists in the media, they'll focus right in on the three or four that hate the United States. There certainly are some standouts as far as those that are spewing venomous hatred, and the media is there to just amplify it over and again. That video has been seen by millions of Americans. Millions. It's gone viral. As I say, welcome back to the Trumpet Daily. I'm your host, Stephen Flurry. We certainly appreciate you tuning in. We broadcast live every weekday at the trumpet.com website and on Channel 3 at CRN Digital Talk Radio. That's the service that takes the audio only into 11 million households around the United States. But to get to the video presentation, the live video broadcast of this show, you've got to go exclusively to thetrumpet.com. You can go thetrumpet.com/live, to get to all of the podcasts as well as the live show every day, which here in the central time zone of the United States, it's at 11 a.m. 11 a.m. noon on the East Coast and 9 a.m. out west, and at various times all over the earth, as we do have a growing international audience for the Trumpet Daily. On today's show, we've got lots and lots to get to. There's quite a bit on Joe Biden, the illegitimate president, his plummeting poll numbers. Of course, Comrade de Blasio was in the news yesterday with his latest dictate. Vaccine passports in New York City. There's more to report on with respect to the border crisis. You know it's bad when CNN is telling you this is really, really bad. But just from, I won't spend a lot of time on this. It's just sports. It's just media coverage of the Olympics. But dreadful coverage at that, coming from NBC, I should say. But if you think about the focus, this is a point we've made with other stories over and again as well. There is a wrestler, a female wrestler, which I wouldn't recommend for our female audience, by the way. But still, an African-American, a black woman who loves her country. And as I say, this is making the rounds all over social media yesterday. So I'm at home last night. I'm organizing some things out in the garage and in the house, so I'm back and forth. I had the Olympics on in the background, so I happen to come. I step into the house right as they report on this female wrestler, Tamira Mensah-Stock. I'm sure I mispronounced that. In any event, they reported on it because she won a gold medal. And NBC's report was basically, here's another gold medal winner to add to the count and so on. And I kept waiting for them to show a little bit of footage from this press conference where she said, I love America. I love living in America. And there was nothing. There was nothing. It was just a passing reference to this gold medal winner. And NBC, obviously, they're not going to cover anything that would suggest that America is actually a blessed place to be. A blessed place to live. As part of the coverage last night, I also noticed the little segment that they had on Gwen Berry. She, if you don't remember, in the Olympic trials, I think it was, this goes back a few months, she was I believe it was the hammer throw. She got third. She qualifies for the Olympics. They play the national anthem at the Olympic trials. She turns her back. She turns her back on the national anthem. So then she makes it to the Olympics. She has a dreadful Olympics. There were, I think, 12 competitors. She got 11th. And then she's in the news yesterday because she raised her fist, I guess, on two occasions. And NBC last night, they've got a report on that. She didn't even place. She got 11th. And we had to hear about the latest protest from her. We had to hear about the latest controversy. I mean, this is Olympic coverage after all. This wrestler who loves her country, she got the gold. Let's move on to the next story. And let me tell you, okay, she got 11th. She was nowhere near the podium, but she shook her fist. We want you to know this, America. Do you think any video of the fist shaking, do you think that went viral? You would think just from a rating standpoint, NBC would be just clamoring to put on a press conference where an athlete says, I love America. I love living in America. What a blessing. I pray to God. God gave me strength. I'm blessed just to be able to walk. What a blessing it is. To be able to perform, to be able to compete. Says this wrestler. I didn't watch any Olympics the previous night, but I wonder how much there was there on the transgender that was in the weightlifting competition. Here again, another fail, I think in the first round, and he's out. He's competing with women in lifting weight. I bet NBC made time for that one too. The first transgender in weightlifting. So you've got that. If it's bizarre, if it's upside down, if it's anti-American, we're going to talk about it, NBC says. And yet here's this feel-good story, this truly refreshing tidbit from the Olympics. Just a quick passing reference, and that's it. And then, of course, don't get me started on Simone Biles quitting on her team last week, and then everyone around the world and the international media even pretending as if this is just normal. This is completely normal. What if Tom Brady were to, Saturday night before the Super Bowl, what if he woke up Sunday morning and said, you know what, mentally I'm just not there. I'm going to have to sit this one out. I think he'd lose quite a few fans. And in truth, I think Simone Biles lost quite a few fans over the last week. She quit on her team. She made this statement. This was in an article by Piers Morgan, and boy, was he attacked online. You don't go after Simone Biles. She's the greatest American gymnast in history, perhaps the greatest ever in the world. He quotes her in this article he wrote last week. Biles said, this is her explaining why she couldn't go on. She couldn't compete with her team. She said, I feel like I'm also not having as much fun. This Olympic Games, I wanted it to be for myself. But I came in and I felt like I was still doing it for other people. It hurts my heart that doing what I love has been kind of taken away from me to please other people. Well, I came in here. She's on a team. This is not like a solo competition. I mean, they have that too in gymnastics. But this is a team event. And she quit in the middle of the team event. And she said, well, you know, I came into the Olympics and I wanted it to just be for me. I wanted it to be for myself. And I started realizing that, I was doing this for other people. You mean the other people on your team? Well, I hope so. Piers Morgan says, what in the world? Here is a woman who's just overflowing with confidence. Some would say arrogance. She doesn't shy away from saying she's the best ever, the greatest of all time. And the greatest of all time, she quit because of mental illness last week and then was miraculously healed yesterday, I guess, to do the beam exercise. And the commentating, the news coverage, don't you dare criticize this woman. Don't you dare criticize. Don't you dare talk about mental illness in any kind of a way that would be suggesting she quit. But you look at that wrestler. Here's a woman that worked hard. Worked hard. She talked about her coaches. She gave thanks to God. She got the gold medal. And she gave thanks to her country. And she praised her country. You would think that would have been a main event last night on NBC, but not so. Not so for the propagandists in the media. What did I say? I'd only spend just a couple minutes on that. If you don't like sports, if you're bored with this, I do apologize. But we've got so much more to get to on today's show. This was from the House Foreign Affairs Committee report, the minority staff's Origins of COVID-19. Where did it all start? You talk about the media. You look at the way the media slants its coverage just for something like the Olympics. And then go back to last year. And what some have said is the perhaps the most significant story in history. Where did this virus that shut down the world, where did it come from? And the media last year, they were not interested in it, not in the least. Well, they were if you suggested it came from the Wuhan lab. Then they became very defensive and said, ah, you're a conspiracy theorist. You must be wearing one of those tinfoil hats. This is from the House investigation. It says, based on the material collected and analyzed by the committee minority staff, the preponderance of evidence suggests COVID-19 was accidentally released from a Wuhan Institute of Virology laboratory sometime prior to September 12, 2019. The virus, or the viral sequence that was genetically manipulated, was likely collected in a cave in Yunnan Province, PRC, between 2012 and 2015. Researchers at the WIV, officials within the CCP, and potentially American citizens, that would be Dr. Fauci. That would be Dr. Fauci and his friends, like Peter Daszak. You'll see him in a montage here in a moment. But it says American citizens directly engaged in efforts to obfuscate information related to the origins of the virus and to suppress public debate of a possible lab leak. That's from the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Yes, it came from the lab, and yes, there was a cover-up. Now, consider this piece from The Spectator. It says, a top editor at the New York Times instructed Times staffers not to investigate the origins of the COVID-19. Two Times employees confirmed today. So two whistleblowers at the Times have said, yeah, we were going to cover it. We wanted to anyway, but the higher-up said, nope, can't go there. You're not going to get into that story. It says here, in early 2020, a veteran Times employee tells me, I suggested to a senior editor at the paper that we investigate the origins of COVID-19. I was told it was dangerous to run a piece about the origins of coronavirus. There was resistance to running anything that could suggest that COVID-19 was man-made or had leaked accidentally from a lab. There was resistance from the higher-ups at the New York Times on anything suggesting it came from the lab or that it was man-made. Listen to this. It says the global pandemic was then in its early stages. Donald Trump was running for re-election and COVID-19, he was calling COVID-19 the Chinese virus. His Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, had told ABC's This Week in May 2020 that he had seen significant and enormous evidence of the virus originating in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And so because they were saying that, the media said the opposite. Trump derangement syndrome is real. It is real. That's what you're seeing or reading in this Spectator piece. Same with that House committee report. The investigation. Yeah, we've looked at all the evidence. We not only conclude that it came from the lab, but there was a cover-up. Propagandists in the media. It says here, yet the Times, according to two well-placed sources, refused to investigate the biggest story of our time. This is in the United States of America. The Spectator calls this the biggest story of our time. And here is the Times, the newspaper of record, the gray lady. She refused to report on this. She refused to look into this. And we've seen this before, have we not? Hunter's laptop, the election steal from November 3rd, the false narrative of January 6th. There's footage going around social media now, this crowd, a relatively just peaceful yet raucous crowd outside the Capitol. 1:24 p.m. after President Trump's speech, and the police firing flashbangs and these stun grenades into the crowd. You see that on NBC? You see that on CNN? How many of these hooligans were provoked by either the Capitol Police or the FBI agents that had infiltrated that protest? How many were provoked? How much of this protest, this protest that turned to violence, how much of it was incited? Do you think the House committee that's investigating January 6th, do you think they're concerned about that at all? What did they have? What evidence did they actually even go through in that sham of a hearing last week? Four police officers crying? That's it? Four police officers sobbing about how traumatic it was? Let's get to the evidence. And if you want an investigation, let's actually look at what happened. What was the cause? What was the root cause? What's the root cause of the pandemic? Well, what happened over in that Wuhan lab? It says here, the New York Times squashed the story into the virus's origins. It says, and the Times led the charge to dismiss any questioning of the WHO's now discredited line as conspiracist or even racist. You said, I mean, Donald Trump was a racist to even say Chinese flu. These are like little children working in these newsrooms. It finally says, it was considered a conspiracy theory, confirms a second Times insider who was in a senior position on a different section at the time, and also proposed an investigation. It was untouchable everywhere. The fact that Trump embraced it, of course, also made it a no-go. If Donald Trump embraces it, then you run away from it. That is Trump derangement syndrome. And so all last year, we heard news coverage like this in the following clip, clip 8.
The idea, I think, is quite far-fetched that the Chinese deliberately engineered something so that they could kill themselves as well as other people. I think that's a bit far out, John.
That theory really didn't hold up.
The other likely and probably true scenario that it began in a bat.
Conservative talk show host Rush Limbaugh with zero proof, suggesting a Chinese bioweapon lab is to blame.
There's this question about the Wuhan lab. We know that it's been debunked.
This week, Donald Trump is still pushing the debunked bunkum, despite his own intelligence community's findings that is simply not true.
There is no empirical evidence to verify that.
The most likely origin is from an animal species to a human.
So for people now to say, oh, well, it's emerging as a likely explanation, it hasn't really.
It likely was the emergence from an animal reservoir.
He may pick up the conspiracy theory that this was some weapon.
We don't need to invoke conspiracy theories.
Do you think it's possible this virus was engineered within that lab and leaked? There's no evidence of that at all.
I still think the most likely explanation is this was a natural transmission from a host bat, maybe something else in between, to humans.
It is most likely that the virus originated from wildlife.
Research shows it's much more likely that the virus transferred to humans after adapting from bats to an intermediary host.
Did it come from bats? Most likely.
Most likely. Oh, yes, it came from the bat. All year long. Over a year. Fauci and Daszak leading the way, as you heard there. And they knew. They knew. You can find this out from the emails that have been turned over because of Freedom of Information Act. They knew what was going on. They know all the behind the scenes work. They have all the behind the scenes communication. But they get out there and they lead the way by lying. And then the media, of course, they hop right on board. But because Trump said this, we've got to be over here. Zero evidence? No evidence? Where have you heard that before? There's no evidence of any kind of voter fraud. None whatsoever. And then it starts to turn up. Well, there's not enough to overturn it. And then they get closer and closer to revealing the fraud. And of course, there's the blot them out, silence them, censor them. Gateway Pundit, he had a revelation yesterday. Ron Watkins, it says. You're not going to get this on the mainstream either. Ron Watkins released several photos on Monday, leaked to him from an alleged Dominion Voting Systems employee and whistleblower. So I don't know if this has yet been confirmed by other sources. In any event, Gateway says the documents prove that Dominion has remote access to their equipment during the elections. They had remote access, even though Dominion officials says, no. And the media for their part. No, there's no way. You can't connect them to the internet. And then you find out later, yeah, actually you can. And then now remote access, according to a whistleblower. It quotes Ron Watkins, the one that's interviewed in this piece. He says, and what I put out is maybe 1% is conservative, it says. Maybe 1% of 1%. What I put out is highly focused because it caught the CEO of Dominion in perjury. He said there's no way these machines can be connected in his Michigan testimony. Well, they can be. So another whistleblower. Will the major media, will they care about this story? No, they'll work to cover it up. Zero evidence, they say. Just like they said with Wuhan. Zero evidence. Rush Limbaugh said, without any evidence, Rush Limbaugh said this. We've been treated to a steady diet of that kind of propaganda for 18 months. Well, it goes back a lot longer than that, of course. But the world, these last 18 months, anything that the bad orange man says, the truth has to be the opposite. That's just the way they think going in. And never mind Joe Biden's plummeting poll numbers. The media, they're still going to be there to the bitter end to prop him up, to try to keep him afloat. This is from the Daily Wire. It says, it's official. America doesn't much like Vice President Kamala Harris, and they aren't that hot on President Joe Biden either. Their popularity or approval ratings, they're just plummeting. People don't like either one of them. Americans don't like either one of them. Does this matter to the propagandists and the media? All that matters is their agenda. That's it. Well, it speaks about how low her approval numbers are, the vice president. And then with Joe Biden at the end, it says, what's more, 42% said they strongly disapprove of Biden's presidency, while just 26% said they strongly approve of his presidency. You see this in the YouTube videos they post. Speaking of YouTube videos that go viral, the Biden team's never, ever, ever experienced that. Never. They get a few thousand views, and then 10-1 disapprove. This is from Mediaite. A new poll finds a growing number of Americans are no longer optimistic about the country's current direction. and President Joe Biden's approval numbers are sinking. It says The Hill got a first look at the latest Harvard CAPS Harris poll survey, and they report that Biden's approval rating is at 52%, a 10-point drop from where he was a month ago. A month ago, Biden might still be above water, but he's barely doing better than Congress, whose disapproval rating has risen to 55%. That's from Mediaite. That's a more to the left, more left wing. And even they're acknowledging, as is Politico, as is The Hill, that he's losing what little support he had to begin with. Listen to Missouri Rep. Billy Long explain why his popularity, the fake president's popularity, is plummeting. Clip 6.
What do you attribute Biden's falling popularity to?
Well, look at what he said there, fear. Let's start out with fear, okay? How about the fear of sitting in a restaurant, Tucker, in Logan Circle, of all places, in Washington, D.C., which is not a bad area. They've had 3 shootings since July 1st there. Bystander shot and killed. None of the targets were shot or killed. But defund the police. Let's start with that as far as fear goes. That,
yeah.
200 less policemen in Washington, D.C., a bunch less in Springfield, Missouri, in my hometown. They're closing down, shutting hours down at the police station to accommodate for not having anyone want to serve as a policeman anymore. And then you talk about lies. How about the lie that the border's closed? It's not a crisis down there. I got back from the border a couple of weeks ago, Tucker, and it was absolutely... If you want to go to the border, you really don't need to go to the border. All you need to do is go to the McAllen Airport and watch them putting hundreds and hundreds of illegals on flights on commercial airliners. No ID, no real ID, no driver's license, no passport. We don't even know who they are.
Yeah.
They just have a manila envelope with instructions on it, and they'll fly them and who knows where, and then they don't tell the towns they're coming to, Chattanooga, Tennessee, wherever they want to send them, and they don't tell the local authorities they're coming, let alone not testing them when they get here or worried about whether they have COVID or not or wearing a mask. They want school children to wear masks. They want us to wear masks in restaurants. New York City just announced today that you have to have your vaccination papers to eat in an indoor restaurant, or you can sit outside where the shootings are occurring because of defund the police. So it's just ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, and no wonder his popularity numbers are sinking, as this representative from Missouri brings out. We'll just go right down the list. The border. The border, the sick people coming in, the fact that they're just showing up all over the country. The feds don't tell the cities they're coming. Just puts them on a plane, no ID, nothing. You don't need any ID. The Dems, they really love that. Except when it comes to the vaccine ID. Then, of course, then you've got to carry around your papers. You want to eat in a restaurant? Then you better show up with some ID or something suggesting you've gotten the jab. Listen to Comrade de Blasio yesterday as he announces this vaccine mandate. This is in the United States of America. Here's clip 2.
The key to New York City. When you hear those words, I want you to imagine the notion that because someone's vaccinated, they can do all the amazing things that are available in this city. This is a miraculous place, literally full of wonders. And if you're vaccinated, all that's going to open up to you. You'll have the key. You can open the door. But if you're unvaccinated, unfortunately, you will not be able to participate in many things. That's the point we're trying to get across. It's time for people to see vaccination as literally necessary to living a good and full and healthy life.
Wow. The key. You can't get around New York City unless you have the key. And what's the key? The vaccine. The vaccine is the key. Play clip 3.
The key to NYC Pass will be a first-in-the-nation approach. It will require vaccination for workers and customers in indoor dining, in indoor fitness facilities, indoor entertainment facilities. This is going to be a requirement. This is crucial because we know that this will encourage a lot more vaccination.
This will encourage vaccinations. The fact that you can't do anything, you can't live unless you get one. That's good communist ideology right there. Day 506 to slow the spread. And here we are, vaccine passports. And your propagandists in the media, I mean, they go on and on about the passport. Something that even a few months ago they were saying, well, no, that's, I mean, we're not going to take it that far. But here we are. Here we are. That's New York City. Meanwhile, you've got the governor of New York. He's in all kinds of trouble. The AG of New York said he broke federal laws, federal and state laws yesterday, and then proceeded to charge him with what? Nothing. Nothing. It's just an investigation. And they want the governor to resign, and maybe he will, maybe he won't. But here, if the AG's report's 168 pages, if it's true, if any of it's true, well, where are the indictments? Where's the arrest? Why not put Governor Cuomo in jail for 6 months until we find out if it's true or not? That's what they're doing in Washington, D.C. That's how they've handled January 6th. But if you don't get vaccinated, well, you can't even really live your life. You can't work. You can't go to the store. You can't go to restaurants. Then you add to that this report from the Daily Wire. A new poll indicates that 1.8 million Americans have turned down job offers in order to stay on unemployment insurance. 1.8 million Americans. Is this good? Is this good for the health of the country? Forget about the individual for a moment. Or forget about mental health. Let's talk about the health of the nation. Is it good when 1.8 million Americans say, hey, I don't want to go back to work. I'm drawing unemployment benefits. I want to keep the free checks coming. This nation is sick, and we're bringing so much of it onto ourselves. It's self-inflicted, just like the Wuhan flu. Man-made. You go right back to the beginning, and what do you find? Human beings made it. Human beings released it. Human beings caught it. And human beings started to come up with all kinds of just crazy and bizarre solutions, quote unquote, to this man-made sickness. Solutions that would include cloth masks, lockdowns, never-ending lockdowns, and of course now vaccinations. Listen to Tucker Carlson from earlier this week. This is clip 9.
What does civil rights mean when they're not enforced across the board? When your rights are given to you based on who you vote for, they're not really civil rights, are they? They're privileges. And that's exactly what's happening. In fact, it's happening around the world. Rights that we took for granted, that we believe we were born with in the English-speaking world, have disappeared. The Anglosphere committing suicide collectively. Australia, New Zealand, Canada, the United States, Great Britain. What do they have in common? They speak the same language, they have the same culture, and all of them are allowing COVID to defeat them.
You know what else those nations have in common? They're all Israelite nations. He might not understand that. He's probably not gone through the United States and Britain in prophecy. He calls them the Anglosphere. These are the Israelite nations. And what are we doing? We're committing suicide. We're killing ourselves. That's what's happening in these nations. And of course, some of them, some of the communists among us, they want this. They want to see everything destroyed. They want to see the system topple so that we can get real serious and more overt about communist ideology. There was a story in Richard Stack today coming out of Germany, the Bild. It's actually not from today. It's from back in May. But this was the editor of Bild who came out and apologized to his readers for the fear-mongering. He apologized for their COVID coverage from the past year. He said, when he tried to explain himself, he said, look, when the initial report started to break, I mean, we did think it was very, very serious. We did think that this was a deadly virus. But we really stirred up a lot of fear in response to it. And that's something that led to government overreach. And we apologize for that. We apologize for our part in scaremongering the German people. You're not going to hear that. You're not going to hear that kind of an apology coming from the Anglosphere. No, they just, the draconian measures that they're putting in place in Australia, in New York City, they're just more and more severe and deadly. The sickness, as the Bible says, you can read about the Anglosphere in Isaiah chapter 1. The sickness goes from head to toe. This is in Brad McDonald's piece from last year. When you truly understand the mystery of Israel, you understand the truth about human nature, the need for God's Spirit, the path to salvation, and so on. It says, the mystery of Israel, he's quoting Mr. Armstrong here, has great significance in God's purpose for all peoples. One cannot understand the real purpose and incredible potential of man without this vital knowledge. And then Mr. McDonald writes, Satan doesn't just hate the people of Israel, the nations which, through no individual merit, have been the blessed inheritors of God's promises to Abraham. He says the devil hates the name, the truth and knowledge, the divine revealed understanding embodied in Israel's history. He hates Israel because America and Britain's existence proves God's existence and proves that the Bible is God's word. These are all reasons why Satan hates America, Britain, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa. These are nations that have all descended from Israelite people. You want to get more into that study? That's in the United States and Britain in Prophecy. Call our operators, 1-866-930-3024, and request Malachi's, well, I'm going to get into Malachi's message, sorry. Request the United States and Britain in Prophecy. And get Malachi's message while you're at it, too. Mr. McDonald says he hates Israel. He hates Israel because Israel has the throne of David from which Jesus Christ himself will rule when he returns. Satan the devil hates Israel because as long as this name exists, men will have the opportunity to consider and study God's purpose for Israel. So he wants to blot us out. He's behind. If you go far enough into this, you can look at the radical left. You can look at the communist infiltration. We spend a good deal of time looking at that on this program. But if you go deep enough into it, you know there's a spirit world. There's a real spirit being behind this movement, behind this obsession to just blot out the truth, to blot out Israel, to blot out even the name of Israel. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email some feedback to the show, just send us an email, td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
Herbert W. Armstrong was the world's leading televangelist and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century. Watched, read, and followed by millions worldwide. But his legacy of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded, after pledging to follow in his footsteps, methodically destroyed all he had built. Those who would stop them were silenced or excommunicated. This shocking story of betrayal and deception is told in Raising the Ruins. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Trumpet Daily.
We've been spending some time this week talking about Malachi's Message, the book my father wrote back in 1989. It was first distributed to a larger audience than just me, his son, in early 1990. And it's been around now 31 years, Malachi's Message to God's Church today. And my father recently encouraged us to reread this book as we get ready for the next school year. Those of us that are responsible for teaching at the college and at the academy here in Edmond over at Edstone. Because we need the foundation. And when you go through this study, when you go through Malachi's Message, we've talked before, this is brought out in America Under Attack, another booklet by my father. But when you go through this study, this history that was so much, not just prophecy back in 1990, it was earth-shaking for those of us that were in God's church, those of us that were in the worldwide church of God, the church that God raised up through Herbert Armstrong. And you look at the parallels, the way Satan the devil attacked and destroyed that church following Herbert Armstrong's death, and then the way that he's attacked and is destroying our nations, as I said at the end of the last segment. He uses a lot of the same strategies. He goes right after the people at the top. He goes right after the government. And certainly, as that article by Brad McDonald notes, I mean, Satan's had hatred for Israel for centuries. He hates God's people. He hates God's purpose. He hates God's plan. And there have been attacks going back to, you know, the beginning of these nations. But look at what's happening now, and look at where the United States government is today. Look at the illegitimate administration you've got in the White House. Look at what's happened to the DOJ, to the FBI, to the CIA, to just all of these agencies. How so completely politicized they've become. Listen to this from Malachi's Message. My father says, two of God's very end-time leaders are discussed in 2 Thessalonians 2. One of them is removed. The man of sin refers to the one who led the great falling away. That's one big reason why 2 Thessalonians 2 couldn't have applied in the 1970s. There was a liberal movement in the 70s, but you had Herbert Armstrong still in charge. You had a God-fearing minister, a servant of God, still in charge at the top, right underneath Jesus Christ, of course. My father says the liberals weren't in charge then. Now they are. So this liberal, rebellious element, it was there, and you could say the same about our country. You could say the same about Israel. It was there, but it didn't have control. Once those liberals, once those rebels got control following the death of Herbert Armstrong, we went through that prophecy on Monday from James, James chapter 5. Well, then look what happened to the church. An entire church falling away from God's truth. Look at what's happening in our nation, the United States. My father says further on, one minister kept the old systematic theology project, the STP. He kept that manual. This was the document produced by the rebels in the 1970s. Here's all the doctrinal changes we need to make. Here's all the doctrines that Mr. Armstrong just got it wrong. I mean, he's totally off on. So we've got a systematic theology project here. And this needs to be like the Bible today. This needs to be like the Bible for the church. Mr. Armstrong came back from traveling the world throughout much of the 1970s. And he ordered the ministers of the Worldwide Church of God to destroy that satanic document. It says here, one minister who kept the STP that was written by the liberals in the 1970s, he said, we're doing the same thing again. He kept the STP. It was ordered to be destroyed. Obviously, he didn't follow that admonition. Then Mr. Armstrong dies in 1986. He flips back through the STP and he sees, well, it's the same thing happening. It's another attack, only this time Herbert Armstrong's not around to fight against it. It says here, it's the 1970s all over. Even worse, it's totally inexcusable. Every Laodicean minister ought to see what is happening and act accordingly. You must act, my father says. That's what faith is all about. I mean, you've got to stand up to this rebellious movement. You've got to stand up and fight. This is what faith is all about. Now, you look at what's happening in the nation. I mean, you've got the communist infiltrators all over the Democrat Party. But then look at how many so-called Republicans or conservatives are just weak. They won't fight. They won't stand up to the movement to destroy America. They won't stand up to the propagandists in the media. In the PGR, I gave you this earlier this week, but my father talked about Malachi's message being the foundation of it all. So I want to encourage you, just like we've been encouraged, to go back and to study through this wonderful book. And if you were never associated with the Worldwide Church of God or the Philadelphia Church of God, there may be some things that you'll need to have explained to you by a minister or someone that's more familiar with the history. I tell you, you can certainly pair this together with Raising the Ruins, and then you get the whole story. Raising the Ruins talks about that critical period, that transition period, from the sixth era of God's church to the seventh. But this, Malachi's message, this was spectacular revelation from God. It still is. I mean, even if prophecy's been fulfilled, it's still spectacular that it all comes together, that it all unfolds just the way God said that it would thousands of years ago. I mean, that's a foundation on which we can stand. The Bible talks about prophecy as being sure, the sure word of prophecy. You don't need to doubt it. We just need faith. We need faith. We need to be willing to stand up for the truth of God. This is Ezekiel 2 in verse 9. It says, "And when I looked, behold, an hand was sent unto me, and lo, a roll of a book was therein." So it talks about a book here at the end of Ezekiel 2. And verse 10 says, "And he spread it before me, and it was written within and without," or on both sides, in other words, the scroll. "And there was written therein lamentations and mourning and woe." So this revelation spread out over a scroll on both sides. I mean, lots of content, lots of detail. Inspired by God. Ezekiel 3 and verse 1, just continue on. It says, "Moreover, he said unto me, Son of man, eat. Eat what you find. Eat this scroll and go and speak unto the house of Israel." So take this message, eat it, digest it, and then go and deliver it to Israel. Go and deliver it to the Anglosphere. Go and deliver it to dying nations. Go and tell them. In the case of spiritual Israel, the church, tell them the error of their ways. Show them where this is leading. Show them that it's leading to a destructive end. Verse 2, it says, "So I opened my mouth, and he caused me to eat the scroll. And he said to me, Son of man, cause your belly to eat, and fill your bowels with this roll that I give you. And then did I eat it, and it was in my mouth as honey for sweetness." So this message, lamentations, mourning, woe, as it says at the end of chapter 2, it's also sweet in the mouth of God's faithful people because, well, it answers all of our questions. It shows us why this is happening in the church. Not that it was fun to go through it, but it certainly was exciting to receive Malachi's message to God's church today because it was God's way of speaking to us. Here's what's happened. Here's where it's prophesied. And here's what you need to do. Here's how you need to stand against it. Here's how you need to stand up and fight. Fight for the truth. I mean, it's a message of lamentations and mourning for sure. As you see this abomination of desolation in the wake of Satan's charge, you see all of this destruction all over the spiritual battlefield. Spiritual Israelites, true Christians, falling by the wayside, falling away from the truth by the tens of thousands because of this satanic infiltration into the Church of God. As I say, there's lots and lots of parallels when you consider the history, when you consider the prophecy in Malachi's message, and then look at what's happening in our nation today. Down in verse 15, it says, Then I came to them of the captivity of Tel Abib that dwelt by the river of Chebar, and I sat where they sat and remained there astonished among them for 7 days. And you can study separate from this the day for a year principle. My father's explained before how that with the first 7 years of this work, this church, the primary focus was on spiritual Israel. The primary focus was to get Malachi's message to the members or former members of the Worldwide Church of God so that they could have it explained to them what was happening in the church, why it was happening, how it's prophesied, and as I say, what we should do. We did that for 7 years. And then as the work grew during the mid-1990s, as my father was on television and radio and the Trumpet magazine increased in its circulation and more people came into the Philadelphia Church of God, as that work grew, we saw how much that we needed Mystery of the Ages, Herbert Armstrong's magnum opus, Herbert Armstrong's crowning achievement. That book gives you this magnificent summary of all of God's purpose and plan. And so we started to print and distribute that book. And then we're very quickly taken to court as those members, ministers, officials in the Worldwide Church of God did everything that they could to try to bury the truth. Joe DeCotch Jr. saying he had a Christian duty to keep Mystery of the Ages out of print. That was happening in, right here in the United States of America, the land of the free. They wanted to censor that message, to blot it out, to delete it. They wanted it to be banned. I got a little ahead of myself. Verse 16, it says, "And it came to pass at the end of 7 days that the word of the Eternal came unto me, saying, Son of man, I have made you a watchman unto the house of Israel. Therefore, hear the word at my mouth and give them warning from me." So the focus primarily on the spiritual nation of Israel, the church. And then after 7 years, 7 days, as it says in this prophecy, God says, all right, now go to the house of Israel, primarily. Go to the Anglosphere. Go to the Israelite nations, the United States, Britain, Canada, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand. Verse 18, it says, "And when I say to the wicked, you shall surely die, and you give him not warning, nor speak to warn the wicked from the wicked way to save his life, the same wicked man shall die in his iniquity, but his blood will I require at your hand." So when God gives you a commission, when God gives you revelation, when God gives you truth, it's you never see in the Bible someone just receiving it and sitting on it. Or if they try to do that like Jonah did, well, they go through some pretty traumatic experiences. And then Jonah had a change of heart. He said, look, all right, I'll deliver this message. And boy, did he ever. You don't want to receive spectacular revelation from God and do nothing with it. You've got to act on it. You've got to do something with it. And those that read Malachi's message, those that ate it up and digested it, they acted in faith. They did what God said to do. That's a wonderful, wonderful history to be reviewing from time to time. We'll get into it again on tomorrow's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly thank you for joining us on today's show. Don't forget, write us, email us, td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you tomorrow.